It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It is open enrollment season for tens of millions of Americans who are choosing a health plan through, say, an employer-sponsored program or on the Affordable Care Act federal marketplace. Kaiser Health News warned in a headline this month, look out for health insurance that seems too good to be true. Join in on subsidies, preventative care, premiums going up, your health insurance coverage story, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Adam Van Spankeren is here, Navigator Program Manager for Covering Wisconsin. That's a state-licensed free navigator helping residents enroll in health coverage, marketplace, and Medicaid. Adam, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but we are in the thick of open enrollment season. And, you know, I'm sure you can feel it. And there's a sea of plans out there. There are gold plans and platinum plans and, you know, silver plans, HMO plans. How do we navigate open enrollment?
Yeah, no, that is a huge question to start, really, because that's why this role of mine and my teams exists, federal health insurance navigators, to help people really understand their coverage options, which, as you said, I think I like that, a sea of them. There are hundreds of plans available through the health insurance marketplace, which you'll probably hear me say healthcare.gov a lot more, just so that really gets home for people. First things first is just knowing that open enrollment is on right now, which we've started that. So November 1st through January 15th. But knowing that if you want coverage to start on January 1st, you want to get your coverage, you want to sign up by December 15th. So as always, I want to alert people to that first big deadline of December 15th. Beyond that, you know, there are, like I said, so many plans available on healthcare.gov, and it can be really daunting. But that's why I want to let people know that Covering Wisconsin and our affiliates have navigators who can help people through the process. As you mentioned, our services are free. We not only help people sign up, but we help them understand their coverage options. And, you know, as plans change every single year, we look at those changes and we help people understand what that means for them. What the cost changes look like, what they can expect from their plan for the coming year. People who are doing this on their own, obviously people can and should do this on their own if they feel comfortable doing so. They should be going to healthcare.gov this time of year and checking out those plans and prices that are available to them.
Adam, you know, what are some key questions that we should ask ourselves and keep in mind when considering different health plans?
Yeah, that is a fantastic question. I think people go into appointments either with navigators or into their own health insurance enrollment with some questions in mind. And I would say those are usually good questions. And they include things like, you know, can I see my doctors? You know, which doctors are a network for me? That usually seems to be the number one I hear from consumers. The second falling close behind that is price. You know, can I afford this plan? Is the monthly premium, the monthly amount I have to pay to keep this plan affordable for me? And then you need to know things about your current household situation, you know, and what that means when I say household is typically who am I filing taxes with? Because that's what's going to determine how much savings you get on the marketplace. The marketplace allows you to lower those premiums based on your household size and your income, and you get financial help based on that. So the important thing is to go and actually check out your options and apply to see what you're eligible for. There are other questions, you know, about are my prescriptions covered? I'd say that's another big one that comes up. And then it can get more complicated from there. And that's where I encourage people getting help from a navigator. But
here's how I see it. I view health insurance from three perspectives. Like I look at, okay, the prescriptions that you mentioned I need filled for my family, the preferred doctors or the providers we want to see and that we want to really be in network. And then my third thing is the hospital of choice, the hospital where we would wish to receive treatment. And that's a hospital we put down, by the way, and all the waivers for our kids when they're at camp and all the activities. Yeah. It crosses over into insurance territory. So how do you view those things as you look for coverage?
Yeah, it's a balancing act right? And that's where I think the order that I listed first, the hospital and provider, that's really number one for people. Because like you said, that's where, you know, that's your family center for coverage, right? That's mm-hmm. where I'm going when I'm sick. That's where I'm sending my kid when they're sick. So really, you want to look at the plans in detail. You don't want to, you know, you want to take your time and really look and see, are my providers in network? And then look for the plan that you can afford. And thankfully, there are more options than ever. There's more savings than ever, thanks to things like the American Rescue Plan, that will allow people to afford more coverage options than frankly they ever have before. So we have things, opportunities that have come out of the pandemic as we've responded to it in really positive ways, like the American Rescue Plan.
We're answering your questions on open enrollment, and Adam Van Spankeren is with us, Navigator Program Manager for Covering Wisconsin. You can join in with your open enrollment season questions. What things have tripped you up? What are you changing? 800-642-1234. Adam, in Wisconsin, two programs offer healthcare coverage for low-income children, pregnant people, people with qualifying disabilities. That's Medicaid and Badger Care Plus. What is the distinction? What's the difference between the two types of health insurance?
Sure. Well, thankfully, I will say that Medicaid is a bucket of programs, right? There's actually a lot of programs, but instead of making it more complicated, I can make it less and say that the state has done a really nice job. Wisconsin historically has done a really nice job combining all of our programs and streamlining them to the point where you are doing one application and it's checking you for all of these different programs, whether it's Medicaid or Badger Care Plus, which Badger Care Plus is then divided into Badger Care Plus and CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. So now we have coverage for pregnant women, children, childless adults, all at different income levels. And when it comes to coverage, the income level does represent most of the difference. Mm-hmm. There are other eligibility criteria, especially for disability programs, but really it's if you're financially eligible, if you live here, you should be able to get on Medicaid or Badger Care Plus. Wisconsin, most of what we're talking about with Medicaid is Badger Care Plus.
If your income changes and goes up, will you lose your coverage through one of these programs, or how does that work?
That is a very timely question. Because of the public health emergency that's going on, COVID-19 pandemic, and when I say public health emergency, I mean as declared by the federal government, people have not been going off of Badger Care when their income is decreased. It's actually been frozen to allow people some breathing room to continue using their Badger Care and Medicaid coverage. So it's a really unique time that way. When their income does go up, when they will lose their Badger Care coverage after the public health emergency, they will get a special enrollment period to go into the health insurance marketplace.
Okay. What happens if you move out of state during the year, during your coverage? What happens to your coverage then?
Sure. If you move out of state, and say you're on Medicaid coverage, your Medicaid coverage will end because residency is a requirement of having that coverage. If it's health insurance marketplace coverage, there will be a marketplace there and you will be able to end your coverage here and start a new one with a special enrollment period there.
We're talking with Adam Van Spankeren, a Navigator Program Manager for Covering Wisconsin. Join in with your questions on private health insurance coverage, what you've noticed or experienced with your plan. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House said this month the Inflation Reduction Act saves 13 million Americans an average of about $800 a year on health care premiums. And that's by continuing Affordable Care Act premium tax credits that were enacted through pandemic relief packages. Join in on open enrollment season, encountering the HMO, PPO, FSA acronym jargon soup. What's changing? 800-642-1234. Adam Van Spankeren is Navigator Manager with the nonprofit Covering Wisconsin and stays with us. So Adam, you know, high deductible health plans, they're eligible for these health savings accounts. And you put money in these HSAs. How do these accounts work, and how do you ensure that the account is seamless for paying out like medical bill things, that there isn't a lot of red tape?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Health savings accounts, they work by letting you put in money pre-tax, which you can then use towards medical expenses. There isn't too much red tape with them in general. The trick that most people have is making sure that those funds either roll over or have all been used by the end of the year. Typically speaking, they work pretty well with high deductible health plans, but the health insurance costs can be high enough that it's not as worth it to use a health savings account. But that said, they are very useful in those situations where somebody can put enough in there and it reduces their taxable income enough to be useful.
Because sometimes there's that mad dash at the end of the year to make sure you've used up the HSA, because sometimes it doesn't roll over. And so you get, you know, like some emails about, hey, what about contacts, or what about this, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes, that's something definitely to be aware of. Let's take a call now. Georgiana in Milwaukee. Georgiana, go ahead.
Hi, I have a daughter who is going off of my insurance next summer. She has a full-time job, but it's for a nonprofit. She has no benefits. So I'm wondering what you recommend for young people starting off.
Without benefits. Great question. Yes, Adam.
Yep. That is a fantastic question. When adult children hit, age 26 and age off of their parents' insurance, the marketplace is there for them. The health insurance marketplace, healthcare.gov, they are one of the main populations qualifying for a special enrollment period. It's the same as a loss of coverage. And, if she has some income, then she's not going to be eligible for Medicaid, and she'll be able to get into the health insurance marketplace with a tax credit, bring that premium down, and it'd be affordable for her moving forward.
Oh, that's interesting. So that when you do age off of the parents' plan, that is basically open then for you to go to healthcare.gov. It is.
Yep.
Okay. Good to
know.
Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah. Georgiana, does that help?
So she should just go to that website and look around on there.
Yeah, and if she at all feels, overwhelmed by the process, or even slightly intimidated by the process, I would recommend she call Covering Wisconsin and work with a navigator.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Georgiana. Tara now in Hill Point. Tara, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, is there any options with healthcare.gov when you're in between coverage, like I had started a new job? And COBRA is really, really expensive. So I was just wondering if there's any resources available between the coverage.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great question. So COBRA is an interesting one. Depends on if you've elected COBRA or not. Ideally, you get to the health insurance marketplace while you're still in that period where you've chosen or not chosen to take COBRA yet. Or you could come in during open enrollment, like right now, and get into the health insurance marketplace. Typically, the marketplace will have more affordable options than that full-priced COBRA coverage for you. So you can go to the marketplace while you're in that transitional period between the two jobs, between the two coverages. And then once you start a new job with new benefits, you could end your marketplace coverage and start fresh with that new plan. But yeah, you do need to be careful when deciding whether or not to elect COBRA, because it could, once you're in it, it could make you ineligible for tax credits for a while until open enrollment.
Tara, have you elected for COBRA? Do you know?
I did not. It was very, very expensive for the coverage, and I just figured it was it wasn't worth the cost, I guess, but I wasn't sure.
Okay.
Expensive. And COBRA being full price health insurance is not typically cheap unless, the employer is still paying some part of it. So definitely go to the health insurance marketplace and get, you can find a plan for that transitional period between jobs.
Tara, thanks for the call. Daniel now in Madison. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. So I have one of these health savings accounts with a bank called Optimum Bank. I don't know if I can say their name on there. And they mailed me a debit card. I tried to use the debit card at the hospital to pay for out-of-pocket expenses. The card was declined. I tried to reach out to the bank, and it would be like, let's put it on hold. Let's to the next person, to the next person. It takes forever until the call just drops. So that's just my difficulty with this health savings account that I had.
Oh, Daniel, I'm sorry about that. Adam, what would you suggest?
So that's disheartening. And you know, not, unfortunately, you know, it's something that we see in red tape, administrative barriers like that, where people get sent down phone trees. I would suggest, you know, not giving up, first of all, continuing to work with the bank, but also work with the provider, work with the hospital where you're trying to get services, and see what they suggest, because they will have encountered this issue before. They will have worked with banks that have been difficult and people who've been managing health savings accounts before. So work with your provider as well as your bank.
And so how do you work with your hospital? What is that like? Who should you be calling?
Yeah, that's a great question. Usually there are member advocates of some kind. They often have different names. They might be called navigators, not the same kind of navigator that a Covering Wisconsin health insurance navigator is, but patient navigators or benefits counselors or member advocates. Oftentimes, you know, if you're insured, you could start with member services, and the first point of contact will be able to help you escalate your the issue through the ranks until you get the right person you need to talk to.
Adam Van Spankeren with us, navigator manager with the nonprofit called Covering Wisconsin. Join in on open enrollment season. Your questions at 800-642-1234. Adam, what are the top line changes to Affordable Care Act health insurance this season? What should people be aware of?
Sure. I'm always pleased to report when there aren't too many changes, because it's working, right? That's always good. But there are some really cool ones and good ones with, you know, not a lot of time. The one that's really exciting is the family glitch. Basically, people who had job-based coverage offered to them that wasn't affordable for their families weren't able to get help from the marketplace. And now that has changed. So people who, if their coverage is offered through their job and it's affordable for them, but not their families can now get coverage through the marketplace. And that is very, very exciting. We've been waiting like 10 years for that fix.
Wow. So, you know, it's confusing with the acronyms, and especially with the difference between an HMO plan and a PPO plan. Can you kind of just break down the difference there between an HMO and a PPO?
Sure. An HMO is a health maintenance organization. It's most of your plans. When you're thinking health insurance, you're mostly thinking an HMO as a, you know, a network of providers, network of hospitals, clinics that you're going to where you can be confident that you're seeing the providers that are in network for you. A PPO tends to be a little bit broader and has more providers in it across a larger spectrum. But it can be across state lines, typically more than an HMO will be, but they tend to be a little bit more expensive, and you do need to be careful and make sure that the providers you're seeing are in network. In both cases, you want to be really aware of your in-network versus out-of-network providers. And for the average person, I would say that the difference, once they start using their health insurance for the year, it becomes moot.
Just some follow-up here on the federal No Surprises Act that went into effect this year. The law partly aiming to protect patients from these unexpected medical bills due to emergency services. Some patients are still getting these unexpected medical bills. What can people do to avoid surprises?
Yeah, you know, balance billing still happens. And, you know, with the No Surprises Act, you're talking about these bills, these especially unexpected ones, come from either emergency room care or non-emergency care, where you're seeing a provider that isn't in network. So kind of like what I was just saying, you can do everything in your power to be aware of what providers you're seeing. You know, are they in network? It may seem disruptive to an appointment to ask questions like that if you're going, you know, you're worried about your health first, right? You're not trying to worry about all the barriers to payment and things like that. But if you just be aware that these things do happen and talk very closely, member services, billing department, like really feel comfortable interacting with your health plan to make sure you understand your bills. And when in doubt, contact a Covering Wisconsin navigator and we'll try to help you make sense of everything.
Adam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Adam Van Spankeren is Navigator Program Manager for Covering Wisconsin. That's a state-licensed free navigator helping residents enroll in health coverage, Marketplace, and Medicaid. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about public art in southern Wisconsin.
In a particular neighborhood in Madison, there are birds that you don't need binoculars to see. They tower 3 feet tall and stand completely still. WPR's Jenny Peek introduces us to Madison-based artist Joe Jensen, who started crafting the giant wooden birds for her neighbors during the pandemic.
There's a street on Madison's east side that's dotted with larger-than-life birds. A sandhill crane, a red-winged blackbird, a pink flamingo. No two are alike, except for a couple of cardinals. Artist Joe Jensen is behind the eye-catching wooden replicas. She says what started as a gift for one neighbor exploded into a painted flock, transforming a stroll down the sidewalk into a birder's paradise. When I visited Jensen's home studio, she told me with a wry smile how the idea caught on.
Well, I've been making art my entire life, painting birds. This started last year. And it would, like I said, it was just a fluke, something to do. I made a large robin because I was yearning for spring. So I put it out in my yard, and my neighbor Anita came by and told me that it was her, I believe, spirit animal. So, of course, I thought, well, if it means that much to you, and I gave it to her. And then another neighbor said, I would really like you to make me a red-winged blackbird. And then neighbor Julie across the street, I've made several for her. And from then on, it was just one after another.
Jensen shows me the spiral notebook where she keeps track of all the wooden birds she's crafted so far. She reads the names one by one.
Yeah, there's a yellow warbler in there and a titmouse and a kookaburra, hummingbirds. Goldfinch, nuthatch, indigo bunting. I made my neighbor who has bees a queen bee. Whooping cranes, kingfishers, barn owls, doves, orioles, night herons.
While her artistry is apparent, Jensen breaks down how she creates the wooden birds and shares tips for people who want to make their own feathered friends.
They're made out of plywood, half-inch plywood, and I cut them out with a jigsaw. I purchased a projector so that I can trace them onto the wood. I was freehanding it, but they get a little distorted when you freehand. So I put them on the wood, cut them out with a jigsaw, sand them a bit, and then I prime them, and then I paint them with acrylic paint, and then I coat them with a waterproof polyurethane. Well, they're much larger than life. The robin was probably about 3.5-4 feet long, beak to end of the tail, so is a big robin. And the egrets are, maybe close to 4 feet tall. I'm limited by what I can lift, so basically I get 2x4 foot pieces of plywood. I am not going into mass production on these things. I am only making them for neighbors because they take a long time to make, depending upon the complexity of the colors in it and what the bird's doing and so forth. I mean, it can take a couple of days to make these. So, sorry folks, you can figure it out. I just told you how to make them,
Looking at her own yard, Jensen says she hopes the carved creations can be a way for people to express themselves and have a little fun along the way.
I think in in Wisconsin, people have seen the ubiquitous Dutch people bending over, showing their bloomers and stuff. the bathtub blessed virgins and things like that. So however you want to junk up or beautify your yard is up to you.
WPR's Jenny Peek brought us that story on artist Joe Jensen's Wooden Birds in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now the proverb goes, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But what's really in it for us to persevere? Rachel Feinzig is the work and life columnist for the Wall Street Journal. She recently wrote a column called The Case for Allowing Yourself to Be Bad at Something. And she spoke about the piece with Wisconsin Public Radio's Lee Rayburn.
And Rachel, what inspired you to write this column?
So I was at a yoga class with a colleague and friend this past summer. I am a runner and I got injured. So I was like that girl, you know, that injured runner in the yoga class trying to fit in with all the experienced yogis. I am so bad at yoga. And I said to my friend, like, I hope after the class, I hope you weren't watching me. And she told me two things. One, no, I wasn't watching you. Like, I don't care, which I think is an important takeaway for all of this. But the second thing she said was, you know, my husband won't even come to yoga with me. He won't do anything that he's not great at. And I just immediately knew I had to write a column about this and why we are so bad at being bad at things.
Well, and how do you get good if you're not bad at it first? And maybe that says more about me than anything else, Rachel, but I certainly had to wonder when I read your article, how does anybody start out of the gate being so brilliant and being able to dance so well? Doesn't
completely
happen, does it?
No. And I recounted my yoga story to someone that I talked to for the story. She's actually a professional mountain biker. And her response was like, what did you expect was going to happen to you at yoga class? Like, people spend years trying to master this stuff. And it often comes with periods of getting worse or staying stagnant. Like, progress is not linear and doesn't come in this kind of like lockstep, you know, way that we expect. And so, yes, I think you're completely, completely right. It's totally normal to be bad at something, especially at first.
Rachel Feinzig from the Wall Street Journal looked into this for us, and I believe at some level we could all relate. What are you bad at? And Rachel, as you write in the Wall Street Journal, that you heard more profanity while interviewing for this story than you did when you actually did a story about profanity.
I was so quiet. I could not believe how upset and like deeply emotionally affected people were as they told me these stories about their failings, about things, you know, that oftentimes were like fairly inconsequential, just in the sense that they were hobbies, things they were doing for pleasure, not like I have messed up this massive part of my life. And yet they were just torn and tortured about it, really.
And it feels that way, and it sounded that way from the interviews and the curse words you couldn't use for your story, Rachel. But it goes towards, and you write about this, social perfectionism, the trend of social perfectionism, that we have to be great. There is no room for error here. But those trends are changing, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what I felt like really made this an important story to tell right now, this idea that all of us have become more perfectionistic over the years. There is research that's been done on this, analyzing students. We all fall somewhere on this kind of scale of perfectionism, and the average is just shifting more to the right, more toward, yeah, that kind of no tolerance for failure, obsessed with how other people are perceiving us. This idea, they call it social perfectionism. There's a lot of reasons for it that we can talk about, but I think it makes a story like this just way more pertinent in this moment.
So you are way out of balance at a yoga class and you think everybody is looking at you, even though they're doing the downward dog. So couldn't even see you unless they were doing the position incorrectly. But there is this sense that, oh my gosh, everybody's looking at me. And the reality is everybody's kind of thinking about that themselves, aren't they? That you're not on a stage.
Oh, completely. And we're all just totally self-obsessed as humans. I know they didn't mean that in like a bad way, but you know, we're worried about how we look as compared to kind of picking apart other people, especially in a situation like this where it's just a yoga class. Like, I wanted to talk to people about all parts of their lives, and certainly some of it was about work, but some of it was just about this kind of plethora of hobbies that people have or side interests. And it was just fascinating to see how people thought about being watched and being viewed.
Mm-hmm. So right now, I want to know what you're bad at. Or if you don't think you're bad at anything, I'd love to hear from you with our guest, Rachel Feinzig, who is the work and life columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Let's go to Marcia in Stevens Point.
Yes, I'd just like to tell you that I don't consider I'm bad at anything because I do not have an inner critic.
Well, what's that like?
Well, it's fabulous because I don't have to feel bad all the time.
So dancing, singing, it doesn't matter. Ice fishing, there's no way. I mean, you're good at it, or you just don't have anybody telling you that it doesn't matter.
I never considered it matter. If I have fun doing something, what's the difference whether I'm doing it as good as the next person?
If you're having fun doing something, who cares how good you are at it? Rachel, that really resonates with me.
I love that. We should all, me especially, Marcia's my new therapist. What a great advice.
Exactly. And so as I think of this, if how do you get rid of that inner critic? Marcia doesn't seem to have ever had it, which I would think might be a blessing and a curse, but how do you shake it?
I think part of it is just embracing the fact that you're a beginner, like telling yourself, reminding yourself that people like helping beginners. It just being kind of honest about it and asking for help can make other people feel like they're the experts.
Rachel Feinzig, work and life columnist for The Wall Street Journal. And going back to the idea that everybody's watching, you talked to a business owner, Elliot Pepper, for your story in The Wall Street Journal, and he had some glaring discrepancies. There were some things he was not great at, but he didn't want to admit it, and it cost him, at least business-wise, on his bottom line. Once he realized that he was able to fill the gaps and do so, his quote was, "People don't care that much." People don't care that much, Rachel.
I know. I love that quote. And I thought it was a really fascinating example because he would go to these networking events for entrepreneurs, you know, where people kind of offer helpful tips, and people would ask, you know, how's he doing? And he would just,
great.
He'd just say, "I'm killing it." On like FNF, but he couldn't, you know, admit his failings, which were not really about like the substance of his business. He's an accountant and a financial planner, and he knew the ins and outs of all these complicated things, but he couldn't handle things like, you know, collecting on invoices. And so, you know, for him, the answer came from finding a business partner who was A, good at the things he wasn't good at, and B, who he felt comfortable opening up to and learning from. And that kind of just solved the problem.
Let's go to Pat in Green Bay with things we're not so great at and why that might not matter.
Thank you for accepting my phone call.
Thanks for calling. What do you got?
All right. So my thing that I am just horrible at is reading people.
That's got to be rough, Pat.
Well, okay. To put it in context, I have, as I like to call it, my side hustle. I'm practicing for retirement. I create wooden wares. So wooden spoons, you know, utensils, mm-hmm. things like that. So I'm always trying to look in the magic crystal ball of what do people want next year? Well, right, I've been doing this for three years. I still don't have it right.
Well, it's just 3 years, Pat. I think you got to give it 30. And even after that, human behavior, that you've really, who would be very good at that, Pat? I would be interested to meet the person who would be very good at that. Rachel, so great with wooden wares, but not easy to figure out what wooden wares people are going to want.
I mean, it reminds me of the Elliot Pepper story, right? Where you're good at doing the thing and and there's this other skill set that's not really central to the doing of the thing that you're missing. So I feel like it's something where you could, you know, just ask someone else for help. And I also think it just goes back to the point of like you said, it's only been 3 years. Everything takes longer than we think it will to get right, has been my experience.
That is WPR's Lee Rayburn speaking with Rachel Feinzig at the Wall Street Journal. There is more conversation ahead. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's jump back into our being bad at things and doing them anyway conversation. The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Feinzig recently spoke with WPR's Lee Rayburn.
Jeff in Superior standing by. Jeff, what are you bad at?
Good afternoon. I'm 62 years old, and I've spent a lot of money in my lifetime trying to become good at carving pumpkins.
Like just the nose and the eyes or the elaborate
You know, Those young women in their 20s and 30s, they're so effortless. You know, they can do it for the kids. But I don't have that flair, that intuition, or that whatever je ne sais quoi they have. But they seem to do – their pumpkins are perfect. And I destroy a pumpkin when I try to make it. I try to carve it, and it's. I feel sad. I feel sorry for the pumpkin, but
wait,
I keep trying.
Now, is this something you only do during Halloween season, or is this a year-round practice that you've developed until you put in the hours to become good at it?
Oh, I'm still not good at it. I've put in hours. I've lived in community. I've lived with people. I've even tried to bring this privately so I'm not embarrassing myself.
Wow.
But I keep trying to make a pumpkin that I can say, doggone it, that's a darn good pumpkin.
Well, wrong time of year to be terrible at pumpkin carving, Jeff, but I very much appreciate the call. And Rachel Feinzig, it's interesting because sometimes being great at something isn't that great. And you talk to a pro BMX biker about what it means to be perfect at being a BMX biker, and it just didn't seem, at least for the person that you interviewed, to be fun.
I think it can take a lot of the fun out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he told me, you know, for him now, because he decided not to go that route of being a professional BMX biker, you do a trick one time, you do it and you enjoy it. And being a professional, you have to do it 100 times until there's no possible way that you could not get it right. And I mean, it wears on people. He found that it was much more sustainable to just keep it as a hobby versus risking injury. He found that a lot of professional BMXers had trouble with money and addiction. And I think there's a sense that keeping something fun oftentimes means not obsessing over perfecting it.
Mm-hmm. You do it so often that it's muscle memory, that you could do it in your sleep. And once you're doing it in your sleep, where's the fun in that?
I mean, it becomes a job, right? A reason to get paid for jobs. No matter how great they are, they're still not that fun.
Let's turn now to Paul in Northern Illinois.
Hi, you've inspired me to pivot just a hair, even though my main thing is yet to come. My dad was a professional drummer, played for Frank Sinatra, the Rat Pack, and when I was a young teen aspiring to be just like him, he said, don't do it. You're going to discover that the music business is just going to eat you alive and it won't make you happy. So I keep drums as a hobby.
Yeah.
And I agree with that previous statement. But my thing that I'm really bad at is reading a room. And I feel like my mission in life is to build bridges and connect people. So I don't mind if I kind of play the fool sometimes in order for people to either get a laugh at my expense or just connect.
So, and this is the second time we've heard this, Paul, and and I can relate to it too. Sometimes it's difficult to relate to people. It's tough to know what they want or where they want to go with it. And sometimes it's not easy to read a room. Rachel, we've heard this a couple times now, and it's an interesting take on and a little bit different than your article.
Right. This idea that people are an enigma. I mean, I think it's true. And I think it's probably especially true in this moment after the pandemic, right? I think a lot of people are probably feeling like they have trouble reading a room or connecting to people in the right way or not being awkward, you know, as we kind of like totally gear up and go back to, you know, some semblance of what things were like in 2019.
And I want to go back to a moment, this idea that we don't like being bad at something because we have this sense that we're being watched or that there is an audience. And I wonder if we were bad at something and there was an audience, whether or not there'd be a change in society. If there was, you know, if I am a bad dancer. And so if I were to bad dance in front of anybody, whether or not that would make it a little bit easier for all the other bad dancers in the world to shake their tail feather.
Oh, totally. I can't remember who, but someone I was talking to for the piece was like, is there anything better than watching someone just leave it all out on the dance floor? Especially when they're just doing their own thing and it's not like they're some professionally trained like ballroom dancer. I think it leaves room for way more like joy and it gives other people permission to just be themselves. And one other benefit that we haven't talked about yet, but that I heard from a surfer who I talked to for this piece was, you know, in so many parts of our lives, we have to be the leader, the one who's helping other people. She talked about how freeing it was to not have to be good at surfing, to not feel that pressure. It's just can be really liberating.
And we put this up on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We asked people about the stuff they tried and were bad at it and what happened. We got a response from Pete who said, I took guitar lessons earlier this year, started off great, but once we got into chords, I struggled. Wasn't putting in the practice time I needed, and then when the summer came, I said I was too busy to continue the lessons, but I wish I had learned guitar. And Pete got a supportive response from Paul on Facebook who says, get back to the guitar, guy. Chords are not that bad if just learn the basic ones. He says, I struggled too, but my daughter encouraged me to get back at it. And now I play in jam bands on Saturdays. Well, get back at it. And you know what's interesting? I've tried to play guitar too. And the one thing I realized is it hurts. You need calluses to do that. So right out of the gate, it's not something you're going to be good at no matter what. But there is this sense that, you know, if you stick with it, you'll be at least good enough to not have to hide it. Right?
Well, yeah. And I also think that there oftentimes does have to be a certain level of being good at something to have it be enjoyable. So to reach that, like, you know, something of a flow state where you feel like you're doing it, like the surfer that I talked to, I mean, ideally, like to get up on a wave, you know, is like this exhilarating feeling, or to be good enough in the water that you can paddle out and be there experiencing it. So, I mean, I'm all for being bad at things too, but I do understand this idea that, you know, I think that for me, if I was just better at yoga, I could do more of the poses and I would be in more of like a flow state, you know, during the class.
So have you gotten back to yoga, Rachel?
No, I totally have given up and just gone back to running. I it's true. I ran away from the yoga as I could.
I've given up on guitar too, and it turns out I'll just have soft fingers and that'll be the way it's going to be. But since you published your story in the Wall Street Journal, what kind of feedback have you received? Have you heard more bad stuff?
Yes, golf has been a big theme for people. A lot of people feeling bad about their golf game. All kinds of things that I haven't even thought of. People have told me about their hobbies, things that they ditched, and then things that they, you know, pursued and eventually got great at. You know, I think photography was mentioned. It's been fascinating to hear people's. I really feel like it goes to the heart of how we feel about ourselves as humans.